Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's TOC podcast. I'm Joe Weichert, chair of O'Reilly's Tools of Change Conference. And if you want to see everything that we're doing on the TOC space, take a look at O'Reilly.com/TOC. It's your one-stop shop for all the webcasts and podcasts, short-form content, and in-person events that we've got going. I'm joined today by John Conley, Vice President of Publishing and Commercial Print at Xerox. John, welcome to this TOC podcast.
Good morning, Joe, and I'm happy to be here.
So, John, can you tell the TOC audience what your team does at Xerox?
Sure. I mean, in short, what we do is we do two things. We take a look at what the trends and requirements are for certain graphic communication segments that Xerox has a lot of focus on. So, in this case, really publishing. And I take a look at what's taking place in the market, what's taking place with our customer's product, the publisher's products. What's required to bring that to market, what services we can bring to our customers to help enhance that, and then work with our team in Xerox to do that. We've got a process to do it. And then the other thing we do, which I think is more interesting, tools of change, is I spend a lot of time looking at what's going to happen. So in the publishing space, what's going to happen is really the interesting question. So we spend a lot of time looking at that, talking to the publishers, trying to evaluate where is the opportunity going to be, and what services or delivery systems will that content require? And then is that something that we can create a service or enhance something we already have to help it come to market? And then again, using the same process as we have, we evaluate it and take a look at it. If that's a good opportunity for us, then we will create those delivery systems, either in a solution or maybe in a new product. And I got to tell you, it's really a great job because you're working with what you need today, what do I have to do in the next 12 months, and you also get to take a look at, gee, what are we going to need 5 years from now? And in this case, it's because the product is changing in publishing. And that's what makes this space really unique among all of the segments in graphic arts right now.
So let's talk about the future here. And you do a lot of work in the textbook space, right? So what kind of changes do you think that market's going to encounter in the next 3 to 5 years?
Okay, well, we'll separate this a little bit. There's two elements of the textbook space. There's the higher education, like there's college, and there's the kindergarten through 12th grade, called K-12, which has gotten a lot of buzz lately because of Apple's announcement last week. But change has been going on in the higher education space really for quite some time. Publishers have been making investments in different delivery platforms. Most of the higher education people are familiar with CourseSmart, which was started with investments from the higher education publishers, and Inkling, which has about 100 iPad apps this year, textbooks across 16 subject matter areas. Again, investments from the publishers to drive that. So I think higher education is going to move first. And I think in many subjects, I think the textbook will disappear as the primary teaching element in higher education. Not for every course, but I think the capabilities of what you can do with tablet-type technology integrated with the learning management systems is going to create a different experience for the student that potentially will be better than what it is today. So higher education goes first. K-12, which is what the noise was really about in this announcement from Apple, I think that's going to take more time for a lot of reasons, which I don't really want to go into, but it's regulatory, it's budgeting, it's environmental, it's requirements made by the states. It's infrastructure and the publishers. It's going to take longer. And plus, you have to understand, how do I bring pedagogy and taxonomy to a product that's now delivered on a tablet and is really no longer a textbook? And in both cases, it's not a textbook anymore. It's an application. So I think that takes longer. There's going to be a lot of trial and error, and they'll do it in those subjects that are easiest to do. And plus, the textbooks have a cycle, right? Most states don't buy new textbooks every year. They buy them every 7 to 10 years in each subject area. So it'll take a while.
So you, in an earlier conversation that we had, you mentioned something to me, and it was a phrase that really stuck with me. It was customized self-publishing. And I think that ties into what you're talking about here. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. And again, let's go back to higher education, because there's been a lot of things going on in higher education for a very long time. Actually, custom publishing, which will be defined as giving the professor the ability to create the course material that he wants from a menu of materials provided to him by a publisher. So the first publisher to do this was McGraw-Hill with Primex in the early 1990s. And that allowed the professor to pick from a host of, say, accounting material and create a specific book just for his course. And then McGraw-Hill would go and produce that book on digital print. And that has since become a very, very big business. That started custom publishing. When I talk about customized self-publishing, is the tools to do that, to create that book, used to be big, expensive systems, right? It cost $1 million, $2 million to build this system that could take all this different material and then put it together and reflow it and put out a book for the person. There are people out there now that you can work with those tools in a SaaS model, and you can begin creating your own materials. We see higher education universities creating their own content now, and with these tools, actually building their own textbook. We see this a lot. You're seeing this in the junior college system, which is so sensitive to cost for their students because they're working. They're trying to find ways to build less expensive content that the instructors say, yeah, we need this. So when they do that, that's customized to the course, and it's self-publishing because it's not going through a traditional publisher. I think you will eventually see that in K through 12 as these publishing tools, as these self-publishing tools which allow you to easily pull the content into a system and output a product. And that could be a print product or an e-product. As those tools become ubiquitous and easy to use and inexpensive to use, which is, you know, what the beauty of the cloud is in working in the SaaS model, you'll see this in K through 12. Because K through 12 instructors, especially in the lower grades, they've been creating their own materials for their kids for as long as they've been teaching. And that's the, you know, and I think the new Common Core standards that are coming out are going to actually reintroduce creativity into the classroom. If you give these teachers those tools, they will create these specific materials that their kids need or the group of their kids need. Again, there's no publisher. It's very targeted, and it's customized. So that's customized self-publishing in education. And I, for one, believe that that's got a great role going forward as part of what you use for teaching materials.
So let's talk for a minute about pricing. You mentioned before sort of the downward pressure on pricing right now. And, of course, I think back to when Amazon introduced the Kindle back in late 2007, they sort of set this expectation in consumers' minds that all ebooks should be $9.99. And it's been a challenge, I think, for publishers to adjust to that ever since. Now, with Apple's announcement, their first wave of titles were, I believe, $14.99, which some of those books, I'm guessing, are probably north of $100 if you buy them in print. So is this lower pricing in digital, especially when it's a richer experience, is that a good thing?
No one's going to do this and not make a profit. Higher education is a very profitable model today. The people who understand how to develop the very complex content are Pearson, McGraw-Hill, Cengage, Norton, Wiley, and they do an outstanding job of this. They will price it so they can make profits to reinvest. But what you get with digital, and again, right now you have a lot of test pricing. Let's talk about Kindle for just a second. Yes, there was a lot of $9.99. That didn't last. They went to the agency model, and now it's $13.99, $14.99 for frontlist titles. But I may be more than happy to sell Patterson's early titles at $9.99, simply because I may not want to keep any stock of softcover books anymore. Mm. So you'll see, I think we're still seeing how that's going to work out. And the publishers are learning how to do this in a profitable fashion because they see the mix. In education, I think you'll see the same thing take place. Right now, you're seeding the marketplace. You want to see what pricing could look like? Go to Inkling, because Inkling sells it by the chapter. So it's $9.99 for a chapter. So maybe the professor could say, listen, that Inkling textbook, I'm not using chapters 15, 18, 22. We're not going to use those. So you ought to just get it by the chapter, which you can download each week as we go through. That's a very different model. So I think overall, theoretically, pricing, the overall cost of the textbook, theoretically, should be less. Because today, the college publisher on many of those textbooks, because of the used textbook market, and students not even buying the textbook, can lose up to 50% of the theoretical sales They don't participate in the profitability of those sales. So we'll see a lot of different models before it's finished.
That's
going to be different.
That's a really good point about the used side and how the publishers, for example, are kind of shut out from that as well as their authors. And you're right that then when somebody goes back the next semester, if they're buying digital, there's not really a used option, let's say. And I think you make a good point, too, about this is maybe a starting point, but let's see where prices go. But related to that, one of the things I wonder about is it reasonable, since I think most colleges, let's say at least for that part of the market, you have to have a laptop if you're a student. And now we're more or less saying that you probably also have to have a tablet, let's say, well, certainly an iPad to be part of Apple's program. But that's a pretty big investment for a lot of families. I mean, do you think that something's going to have to change there in the pricing to accommodate better there?
Well, I think the paradigm that Apple is counting on is that today, over a four-year period of time, I'm going to invest X amount of dollars in the textbook. And they are betting that the combination of the cost of my iPad plus the materials that I purchased will be less overall than what it was for me in my investment in total textbooks. The difference being, I have to make an upfront investment. I've got a fixed cost that I've got to start with before I start adding my variable costs. So when you think of it that way, it's not more money, but the timing might be a little different. And I don't think any of us for a second think we've seen the last iteration of iPad. I think as the apps get developed, as your audience develop, you could see an iPad develop just for higher education. I certainly think that that would be something that you'll see in the K-12 space. Once those apps move to K-12, in order to control the costs, I think you could have a stripped down iPad that just works in the K-12 space. The problem with doing stripped down for higher education is these kids are already incredibly savvy users. They're using this for a lot of stuff. But I think it's reasonable to expect two platforms. The other thing to remember is you can't create content on the iPad. It's not a content creation platform. So the student is still going to have to create content in whatever format he does for his classes. So he's going to need both. If books do make the journey to applications instead of print.
That's true, and I think I'm starting to see kind of the blurring of the line between, say, a notebook computer and even a tablet. I just recently bought a new Android tablet, and it's convertible, basically. You can buy an extra keyboard for it with battery, and when you clip the two together, it looks like a small Mac. And so I think your point about the iPad today is not a good content creation platform. I think these newer types of tablets, and I would imagine Apple at some point would probably offer something like that, are going to be a better way to start creating. And maybe you only have to buy this hybrid device like I just did and not even worry about a notebook anymore.
See, and the thing that constrains, the only thing that constrains it is memory.
Right.
So memory and the ability to run a lot of memory and not overheat your device.
Right.
Well, we know that changes with Moore's Law now. So, and it has continued. I mean, that's stayed pretty consistent. So as you're able to build more and more memory in a small space and control the heat, that you expand the capability of that small tablet. And by the way, if it's connected to the cloud, why do I need a disk drive to store things?
Exactly.
I can create my own storage system in the cloud. So,
right.
But we're not there yet.
Right.
And again, I think if you're doing sophisticated content, you're going to still need that big platform. You're going to want that 24-inch screen. If you're using iBook Author and you're creating textbooks, you're not going to do it on the
platform. Right, right. Yeah, no question about that. So, speaking of iBooks Author, what do you think of that platform? Is it a good model for the future?
I think it is a good introduction. I think that, and again, we have to step back and say, what are they trying to do with this? Other than sell a lot of iPads and get a lot of clicks through the iTunes store, that's their business, that's where they make money, it's a great strategy. But if we look at the K-12 space, all of the requirements what come out of that classroom are so stringent. You have to pass standardized tests that affect the certification of your building as a school. So there's many things that have to be accomplished with this material. And I don't think anyone is going to stand up and say, I've got the answer, how it's going to work. So you're going to see a lot of iterations of how that material is created for an iPad and what else goes with it before we understand the level of effectiveness. Right. We've just started that journey. In fact, I think it's the same for higher education. And it's not just going to be the app on the iPad. Whether you're talking about a college course or a K-12 course, what most people don't see, what the consumer does not see, is all of the materials that a publisher puts together that the instructor uses to deliver that course. And that those tools will change as well. But it's not something that you or I generally see. We see the final product that our children use. So there's a lot that's going to change. And we're in a discovery mode for a while until we say, okay, you know what? We've tried this in biology. It's spectacular. Look at the results compared to the old way we used to do it. Now I got a template for biology. I'll get a template for reading. I've got a template for math. It'll take some time.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, last question for you, John, and I'm really curious to get your take on this, particularly from a textbook point of view. And it seems like there are two camps out there. On one side, you have folks that say, as I'm creating mobile content, I want to be able to take full advantage of the device's capabilities, so all the sensors and the cameras and so forth in it. So I need to create a custom app for that particular platform. That might be iOS or it might be Android or something else. And then there's this other camp that says, gee, that first model is way too expensive because once I create it for the Apple platform, it's almost like I'm starting from scratch when I have to create it again for the Android platform. So I'm looking more at, say, HTML5 or EPUB 3 as a solution to be more portable across platforms. Which one of these do you think is going to be the victor in the end? Or are they still going to kind of balance each other out?
I think this is one of those questions where, depending on which way you answer it, they'll say he's answering it because he's a dinosaur. He's in the new world. And I'm kind of technology agnostic. I look at what is the talent and skill required to create the content. None of these platforms are going to sell unless there's content that goes into them. Apps need to be fed content. And in education, the people who understand how to build complex content to bring pedagogy and taxonomy, design, all the elements of teaching, are still the education publishers. And they're not going to secede that space. And if we want a lot of content in there, you need to do it in a manner that is going to be efficient and cost-effective for them. The more cost-effective it is for the content creators, the more content that goes into the platform, and you drive this sea change. And if you're going to do that, that means you've got to give them a set of standards that work, that they can use to then drive out of their system the different deliverables. And I've seen two publishers who are planning for this. I mean, they know where they want to start, and they know what they have to drive out. But they need standards. They cannot. It's too expensive to have to design for different platforms. And when you think back to I think you and I have been around about the same amount of time. One of the reasons Apple never made it in the business world in the 80s, 90s, you couldn't get most of the business apps done for an Apple. It wasn't until that they began building momentum, that they began building and creating their user base, that today there's hardly a business app that you buy that doesn't say it's Mac-enabled or DOS-enabled. It's that because you've now created a huge user base. If you have individual, the more you cut this thing up, the smaller the piece, the pie, that each platform gets to sell, and it becomes less attractive for the developer. Mm-hmm. So I think if you want to make this successful, set a standard. Make it easy for the content creators. Then everybody can conduct commerce and go out there and compete. And in the end, you should be competing on the value of the features of your device and the quality of the content.
Right. Totally agree. And, you know, As you said, it all comes down to the content, no question about that. I just see a bit of a tendency right now to kind of swing away from platform-specific investments, especially for publishers. A lot of them that I talk to are really concerned about that, and they want to embrace more of these open standards. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
And you know, I'm confident that it will. I mean, we can't look at a lot of examples where multiple standards have held up. I mean, we had Betamax and VHS. We had the platter. You had that platter for a while too before we finally went down to
the laser disc.
Yeah, the laser disc before we went down to DVD. So
right.
I think it has to drive the standards if you want to drive a lot of commerce and make it economical and have everybody participate. You got to have standards.
Yep, totally agree. Well, John Connolly, Vice President of Publishing and Commercial Print at Xerox, thank you so much for being part of this TOC podcast.
Joe, thanks very much, and I'm really looking forward to the conference next week.
Terrific. Thank you.